Quick shout out to our sponsor, Dealfront. Struggling to reach decision makers? Dealfront has you covered. It's your all-in-one platform to target ideal leads and close deals. Dealfront stands out with live European data in multiple languages, giving you insights and access others can't match. Finding the right decision makers is now just a few clicks away. Dealfront combines market signals, web visitors, and EU company databases, all while ensuring GDPR compliance. Ready to transform your sales game? Get your free demo at dealfront.com. That's dealfront.com. Or check the link in the description and show notes. Elevate your sales strategy with Dealfront. Hello, listeners, watchers, subscribers, and fans to the SDR Disco Call Show. And we've got a brand new chapter for you today. If you've been on this show before, then you know what it's all about. But if this is your first time joining, what is it all about? This show is to help people working in the world of sales development, primarily tech sales, and people that do prospecting and trying to break into accounts and book meetings and some nice commission. And what we like to do is bring people that have gone through this career to learn about their insights, to help out other people and inspire them to either get into this profession or understand how important they are into this profession. And my job is to find these people, interview them, and bring these insights to you. And my name is Neil Bouyan. And with a guest that we have on today, I'm really freaking proud and super happy to have him on board. This is somebody that I met through sales coaching and also recently saw them to become number one SDR in EMEA. And we're going to be talking more about that later on. But guest, could you please introduce yourself? Who are you? Where are you based in the world? And what do you do today?
Yeah. So first of all, thanks for having me on, Neil. I am Saad Ghaffour. I was voted the number one SDR in 2024 in EMEA. I'm currently based in Shenfield, which is in Essex. And my current role is I am an account manager at Your Parking Space.
Awesome, Saad. Absolute privilege to have you on board, bro. And in terms of your parking space, and obviously you're now an account manager, what are the typical personas or job titles of the people that you're currently dealing with today?
So it really varies, because it comes down to anyone with a parking space that wants to rent out. So it can be from Tesco's, like huge retailers, to real estate owners or managers, hotels, anything, that anyone who sort of has a space and is looking to list it and create revenue from it. That's who I'm speaking with. So yeah.
Love that, dude. And it is a completely different twist to where you've been before and who you used to speak to. So we'll definitely get into that as well.
Absolutely.
And a question that I like to ask all of my guests, son, outside of sales, what floats your boat? What do you like to get up to? What your hobbies, passions, and interests are?
Yeah, I'll probably say two things right now. So one is cricket, based on my heritage. So yeah. Like, I will always love cricket, although Pakistan is doing terrible right now. So I played at a decent level before, but I'm trying to get back into it. And the other thing that kind of takes me out of like world and sales is, I'd say, gaming. So I think the ability just to jump on PS5 for like an hour or two with your mates and then just forget about quotas and all that stuff.
Yeah,
that's what keeps me going, I think.
I love that. Thank you, sir. I've learned a couple of things. So cricket and gaming, that's awesome, my bro. And as a gentle reminder, what we typically do at this point, if you're watching this on our YouTube channel, is we like to go visit our guests' LinkedIn profiles to get a bit of an insight. And also for those that are listening to this in your local podcast platform, we'll always be putting the LinkedIn profile so that you can connect with the guests, pick the brains, and discuss any of the topics that you're going to be learning about today. And again, with Saad, highly recommend connecting with him and seeing the insights and the great posts that he put out there. But if we go way back, this kind of reminds us of when we first met in coaching. We're looking at your LinkedIn, like, you know, you had this stint like working at ATM Law Solicitors as an internship, then Hamlin Williams, and then, you know, hacker job like for 2.5 years. And most recently, transitioning into an account manager role within Your Parking Space. So Saad, as I like to ask with all my guests, can you take us like way back to the beginning of how did Saad Ghaffour get into sales and how did you get to where you are today, sir?
So I think within me, I've always liked to help people. So the first stint of that was like, I knew my uncle was doing soliciting and like he told me like, I help people with cases, et cetera, et cetera. So I was like, okay, let me go into and see what the life is. So I did it for 2 months. in terms of my experience, I don't really feel like you're making that much of an impact. Not saying solicitors don't, but for me, I didn't feel like I was making that dent. And I don't know why I felt like I had to. So then I graduated from uni. So I went into recruitment. So recruitment sounded nice, right? So it was like, you make commission, you help people get a new job, and you actually make a difference. So I did that for around 10 months, but I found like sometimes the atmosphere or the work-life balance just wasn't for me. So what actually happened was I was actually approached by a recruiter regarding hacker jobs. So it was essentially what I was doing, recruitment, but it was doing SaaS. And I'd never heard of SaaS, but until I spoke to my friend who worked at Workable. So he worked at Workable and he said, look, so I work remotely. I essentially book meetings and get paid for it. And I was like, I don't believe you. And then he showed me, and then he showed me like a commission check and how much he was making in the base. And I was like, this can't be true. So then when a recruiter approached me, I was like, let's have a conversation. And when they said to me, if you get somebody to show up to a meeting, you get paid £200. I was like, this can't be a real job. Generally, I was like, so I said to him, like, my job is getting the deal closed, everything, like getting the 360 person. So 360 recruitment, we call it. You bring the deal in and you close it. And I was like, all I have to do is get somebody on a calendar to say yes, right? And I tell you, I said this to them at the start. I was like, that's it. And they get £200 each time. And I was like, so if I did this 40 times, I will earn that much money. He said, my manager, I never forget, he said to me, if you do that 40 times, I'll be amazed and you will earn a lot of money. So I was like, challenge on. I was like, let's do this. So HackerJob was a HR tech solution where we essentially match live talent to live roles because tech candidates really didn't want to be approached on LinkedIn, right? So that was a massive journey. And that transition was like massive. I think loads of people off the back of that, they a lot of recruiters will probably be listening to this, right? How do I go from recruitment to tech sales? So that's a massive topic that I'll go into now. I think recruiters sometimes have that like know-how of how to get into a business, but they're seen as pushy. It's actually, you have to be a lot less pushy, in my opinion. You have to allow the prospect to speak, breathe, detach from the outcome. These are all things I learned when I moved from recruitment into SaaS sales. But I'm going to be honest, the transition was not good. I remember, I never forget, in my like 0 to 3 months stage. So when I was initially ramping up, I remember being so scared because essentially I was the lowest on meetings count. And I just remember that the CEO, he literally had an end of quarter meeting, right? He put that up. And I swear to you, I was at the bottom. I was like, this can never, ever happen again. So I remember I used to have that presentation just like as my back loading screen. Just so I'd never forget. Because at that point, I was like, I need to like get better at that point. So,
I love that. And to pause, because there's so many things within that that I would love to unpack. And like coming back to the beginning of, you know, where you had this thing where you want to help people and you want to make an impact, and you felt within that original firm, you wasn't really doing that sort of thing. But then you graduated from uni and then you started looking at other avenues, and, you know, recruitment was one of those early things to do in. But we're coming back to this impact bit and wanting to help people. Where do you think that kind of stems from? Like, where does that inherently come for you, Fasad?
Question. I think so, probably from my mum, because she just like, she's so selfless, right? She just does everything for everyone in the house. And like, my reason for working hard is her. If it truly boils down to it, and like, I think my parents have just instilled me, just be a good person no matter what. And also, I feel like everyone I spoke to, so when I started, I reached out to so many people, like on LinkedIn. Like, I've reached out to so many VP of sales, so many AEs, right? When you speak to, and my VP of sales said this to me, right? So he got to the point where he became the top biller and he was like, what's next, right? So I feel like, obviously, I think everyone should go on that journey of going through that process, learning those skills and going through that. But eventually, I learned really quickly that your life is to like serve other things rather than yourself. Because even if you go to that maximum level of like reaching it And like you, obviously, I listened to Diary of the CEO as well, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone says when you earn that type of money and you reach that set of status, you go, what's next, right?
Yeah.
So if you can find early on how you can help people or what you're doing is purposeful, you will never not be poor and you'll never not have purpose, which will mean you will work hard. And as a byproduct of you working hard, you will earn money regardless. And if you can do those two things, you're onto a winner.
I love that. That's great advice. And you're right. You know, the best way to help yourself is by helping others and, you know, serving others and helping them achieve what they want to do. It brings a lot of fulfillment. And if you can keep it, like you say, consistent, the money, you know, will kind of come with it as well. So I love that. And then kind of the next bit was, you know, you're speaking to this person and a friend at Workable and they're like, dude, if you book this meeting, you get £200. And to you, you were just like, what the hell? And I've spoken to a lot of SDRs that have come on the show. Like when they was initially propositioned with tech, with SaaS and the potential money you could do, they all felt it was a scam. They're just like, something's not right here. And I was, you know, exactly the same because I used to like work in a call center booking meetings where you didn't get £200 per meeting. It was much less than that. And then when I went into a tech startup and they said, yeah, this is a type of money that you could be bagging, I was like, are we scamming people? Is this fraud? Like, how did you rationalize that? And how did you come to think like, okay, this isn't a scam? Like, what was that experience like for you, Saad?
So it was twofold, right? So one, it was like, see my friend do it, right? So he actually left Workable after 6 months because he got a pay rise and like, moved on to a different company, something he was passionate about. So I was like, so he's moved from one of these scam companies to another scam company. So it must be real, right? Yeah. And then I was listening to him and he was like, so trust me, this is like real, but you have to do a lot of learning. So then I started looking at like apps and stuff like that. And I was like, I was not like LinkedIn guru or anything like that. But when you realize like, because you're young, right? You don't think about stuff like too much. Like you just kind of do things and then you figure out later on. And that's what I did with SaaS as well. Yeah. But like, let's say, for example, the app Bolt, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like you have everyone who lives in East London or Central London knows about Bolt.
But yeah, then Bolt, Uber.
And then I just searched it on LinkedIn and I was like, hang on, they've got salespeople. So I just thought like Bolt is just an app. It just turns on and that's it, right? There's a CEO, there's a dev team and that's it. But no, there's a sales team in there as well pushing this. So I did that. And then also when you speak to people and like you see a lot of people's LinkedIn careers and you're like, okay, this is a real like
thing.
Yeah, it's a real thing. And then when you actually get in seat and then you see all these SaaS products that people are using and all these tools, you're like, oh my God. And that really blew my mind. Like... what's that one app? I think me and my friend always discuss it. We're like, one day we're going to come up with a SaaS product and we just don't know what it is. But and like, for example, 1Password, right? Such a simple SaaS product, right?
Yeah.
But it's a full-on company, right? It's just a simple idea. 1Password for everything, right? But it's a business need and people need it. And yeah, when you figure out a problem and a solution, that's a business nowadays. As long as you can find the technology behind it, that's what I realized. And that's what made me realize, oh, this isn't a scam. This is legit.
This is real.
This is legit. This is how businesses work. This is how somebody's idea. This is how, like, for example, Tesla came probably.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Amazon, this is how it happened. So yeah, that's what was cool to me.
I love that. And I think going on that journey of trying to legitimize, is this thing actually real? And going through that thing of thinking of apps, because, you know, it was similar to what I was thinking, because the recruiter at the time, the way Gabby explained startup, she said, no, Neil, you know, you've got like Apple and you've got like Microsoft. There were all these little companies that started off in people's garages and then they hired more people and then it became an actual business. And then it's the big things and the big dogs, you know. But, you know, from a consumer point of view, like B2C, most of us just pick up a phone, we see the app, our mate tells us about the app, we download it, we don't think anything more of it. But to your point, I remember my early days of being an SDR, every time I booked a meeting and I was on the London Underground, if I saw like an advert on the other side of the tube station, I was like, oh, that's a company. Go check it on LinkedIn. There are the people. There is an organization. Or, you know, like when we were using, like this is way before SalesLoft, we were using something called TauTap, right? Which was then acquired by Marketo. But you start seeing all this tech stack and these tools and like, this is all software stuff. and there's people behind, and to your point, there's sales team. So I think for me back then, it was really like, ooh, shiny new. But I would assume, I like your way of thinking of like, I was looking at the apps, then checking out LinkedIn and seeing like it's got a CEO, it's got a dev team. Yeah, because again, the reason for the, one of the reasons for this show is I want people to come into tech and I want people to come into sales. So hearing that analogy from you, I think is really powerful. And yeah. I love that, Sam.
Well, what you just said is absolutely spot on, by the way. Mm. So I know we're going a bit deeper into HackerJob, but HackerJob essentially helped every single person's like tech journey. Mm-hmm. So like if anyone was hiring or anything like that, I would exactly what you did, right? So let's say I saw something on a train, I would like, oh, that's a SaaS product. They're probably hiring people, and I'd call them the next day. And the whole company was ethos was around that. Like if they're a tech company, they're definitely hiring devs, they probably need to speak to us. And that illusion is like amazing, right? So like, for example, you look at like, I don't know, what's the latest one I saw? Like a dating app, like Hinge or Tinder, right? It's like, oh, they've got a sales team or they've got a dev team behind it or account management, CS, right?
Yeah.
But they all do. And they're all massive companies generating millions in ARR. Learning all those terms as well, I'll try it. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of jargon, there's a lot of spiel going out there. But you know, that's an interesting point that you raise a lot, even with the dating apps, because I think with my friends that might be using Bumble or Hinge or whatever like that, they just see it as the app. But me, like when I come across these dating apps, I want to go on LinkedIn and then I learn the story of, you know, one of the founders at Tinder just didn't like the way that was going. So they went and launched Bumble and they're this billionaireess who's like, you know, changing the whole thing. I'm like, that's the stuff, that those are the stories, like the tech heroes. And my mates are just like, no, it's just an app, it's just a date. I'm like, no, it's so much more than that. There's a story, there's stuff behind it. But, you know, that's kind of when you geek out. But I love, you know, the ethos at HackerJob is if they're a tech company, go check them out. You've got your lead list. It's just there, right?
Yeah.
I love that. So then coming back into your journey of, you know, you're at this business and, you know, you have to be booking the meetings, but you see yourself at the bottom of the leaderboard and then you're using it as a, you know, inspiration and a motivation to remind yourself, no, I can't be here. I have to kind of be on top and, you know, work towards it. What was that transition like to try and climb back up and get out of that rut for you, Saad?
Sure. So I think, first of all, like my friend was like a little bit ahead of me. So it's okay. It's like okay to have somebody ahead of you.
Yeah,
I think everyone needs somebody ahead of them because then you can. Yeah. And if they've been in your position, that's obviously why we did coach Nicobana.
Yeah.
Many posts, right, on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So he was like 6 months ahead of me. So he was like, mate, don't worry. You're still ramping, right? And I didn't even know what ramping was. I thought, oh, I'm going to get fired next month, right? Like to everyone else in the company, they were like, you're doing fine. You was like five meetings behind everyone. It's like your first 3 months. That's fine. But to me, I was like panicking and I was like, oh my God, what do I do? And then I spoke to my friend. He's like, no, Saad, you're on your ramp quota, right? Next quota, next month is like next 3 to 6 to 9 months is where they want to see progress, right?
Yeah.
And that's what you do. So from there, lucky for me, I had a friend who was 6 months into the journey. So every mistake he made, he told me straight away of how to rectify it. But the other thing is me and him, we always wanted to learn together. So first thing is we said, okay, let's go into your company. So I think I saw a post, I can't remember who it was, but somebody said, go speak to the best SDR or go speak to. So first thing I did is speak to the best SDRs or the AEs, the SDRs that got promoted, understood the problems they had, and I was like, cool, I understand that. Right, so did that first. Then I went to the best AE in my company. I said, listen, I get what we do. Just lay it down on the line for me. What problems do we solve? And how do we solve them? So I sat down with him, the senior account executive there. It was like an hour call. And he was like, this. And I went, boom, okay, I've got it. Then I created a sequence of that, which was what I thought looked like a good sequence at the time. So I did that. And I started booking more meetings. And it was like, oh, Saad's like booking good meetings. And it's going well. So 0 to 6, 9 months. By the way, when you work in a startup, there's no like boundaries or anything like that, right? So we were doing 0 to 500, right? And enterprise wasn't even defined, so they were like 500 plus, you know. So he's booking 500 plus, he might be good at this. They're harder to pick, so let's just put him on there, right? So they're like, cool. then me and my friend, we started finding these LinkedIn influencers.
Mm.
We were like, yo, this is good. This is good stuff. So, and I knew my advantage was like, this is me being candid, right? I'm younger, I have way more time. So I think for me, right, I used to do my job and then I used to do like 2 hours plus learning on LinkedIn and messaging people, like, and that was like a side hustle that I was doing to get better at. So I was just putting in so many hours that nobody could beat me in that situation. Mm-hmm. Like, I would call my friend, I'd talk to him about something I've done this morning or I did last night, and he'd give me advice on that. So then what happened was, combining my effort of studying on LinkedIn and then reading books outside of work, and then combining that with his failures and my failures, I became unstoppable at that point, right? So the thing is, I wasn't afraid to fail. So I tried so many things to the point where I got so good at it. I've copied so much stuff from LinkedIn influencers, but the advice I'd give is try it for your like ICP, see if it works, but don't drop it just after like a day or two. Give it 2 weeks, let it run, and then you can see what works. Once I found what worked, it was amazing, right? So I'll never forget. So I now had the ability of being a product market expert, an info expert, and I was starting to become an SDR expert, right? So when you combine those two things, you become like ridiculously good, because nobody knows more than you in your field, in your company, and nobody knows more about your space than you. And when you have those two, you can literally book meetings like crazy. And this is what happened. So 6 to 9 months, right? They were like, okay, we've put him in the harder segment and he's still booking more meetings than other people in the lower segments, which should be easier. And I just never forget, my SDR manager came to me and he's like, you've booked 8 meetings this week. He's like, what are you doing? And like, I was like, so at the start, we was told to use one cadence only. And I was like, listen, man, I've read the cadences. I changed every single one because I, from what I learned from my friend and from what I learned from LinkedIn influencers, right? We were doing everything wrong. I never told him that because how can I go 6 months into a business and say, everything you're doing is wrong. Let me change everything and we can go from there. I just couldn't do that. So when it got to the 6 month, right, I grew confidence in myself. And then from there, I changed everything. I didn't tell anyone at that point. and then basically, like, consistently, I think I booked maybe 14 meetings in a week, right?
Nice.
And there was a week, I just remember, like, it was when everyone struggled and I booked 8 meetings. And he was like, what are you doing? And I was like, I showed him the whole cadence and I was like, this is what I've been doing.
I love that because you're able to then bring data to an argument or a statement of let's try it a different way. But I think, you know, all of that journey from this dude that was worried and he didn't know what a ramp period was, having that friend to bounce and reference off, I think that was really good. And it was really cool to have that because, like, admittedly, like, when I heard the word ramp, I was like, what the hell's ramp? I was thinking like a ramp going into a building. I didn't understand ramp. And then you know that it's prorated up until the point that you start performing. And I think that's a really important topic that a lot of SDRs or people coming into sales to know is that you're not expected to hit 100% within the first couple of weeks or months. And I think, you know, some sales leaders that I've come across have been really unforgiving because, like, if they don't see a result within month one, they kind of dismiss that person and they're just looking for the next. They're just, what they're looking for is a machine. And I don't like that. But here, within your story, you can see month, kind of the early days was, didn't really know what the hell I'm doing. I'm trying to figure this stuff out. I then reference it with a buddy to understand what's going down and trying to up my game. I'm looking to test stuff, start testing stuff, learn from failures. And as you mentioned, you're not afraid to fail, right? Which again is super important because it's within the failures you learn how to succeed and come around next time to do it better. But then as you're, you know, you're reading stuff on LinkedIn, you're talking to your bestie, you're testing stuff out in the field, you know, you're then growing this confidence. And I think where people say, like, how do I get confidence in sales? It's by doing it and being open to it. And I think one thing that I'd love to give to SDRs is anybody that's ever been successful has never gone into this thing perfect. That doesn't exist. You learn it as you go along. Because sometimes people will say to me, like, Neil, how did you do this and did that? I said, I effed up a lot. effed around to find out, and then it kind of just clicked, and then, you know, it goes through that. And then I think that, like, coming to the crescendo of this, of, you know, the sequences, I read it, didn't really like it, kind of wanted to do my own thing, didn't tell anyone, and then coming to your manager to show this data, because I recently had, again, I won't mention names, but I was having a conversation with somebody that was looking to learn about sequences and cadences, and we spent a little bit of time on this, and I enabled them to, like, gave them the best practices, looked at what they were doing, kind of like what we did when we used to look at sequences, right? But this individual came back and said their manager wasn't happy with it and didn't understand why kind of I was advising to do X, Y, and Z. Mm. And I had to kind of let go of my ego a little bit and understand that they're their manager. But I could also see this rep feeling a bit frustrated that they had to kind of use the template one sequence that was created for them. Given that you have kind of shared your, I didn't tell them, I just did my thing. What advice would you give to the rep where maybe they are stuck and chained that they have to follow? Because I do understand,
yeah,
if you've never done sequences, Ken's before, it's good to kind of have the training wheels on to understand how it works. But what advice would you give to the person that's kind of stumped with they can't really do or have the autonomy?
So I just want to make one point back to us and then ask you a question. So when people ask, like, about stuff in terms of, like, doing and learning, so the one thing I say to everyone is optimize learning at the start. Don't worry about earning. And the problem I hear about from SDRs is like, oh, the advice I always get given is like, oh, go to the top SDR and just copy them. But if you don't have the top SDR there, or you are the top SDR, what do you do then? I think this is what separated me from others, right? Is because when people were the top SDR, I was just so curious to learn about the space and what to do. I would reach out to people like yourself, right? So I could have said no to my sales coach, but I was like, this is something I can learn from. And I reached out to other people, and I always said it. But what I also got from that is I got confidence to talk about why I do certain things. So for example, right, when I changed cadences, and this is back to your point, right? I would say, okay, so I've done this CTA because of this reason, and this is why I think it would work. So let's say, for example, I would start, like, when I started at Hacker Job, they would say something like, notice you're hiring X position. And I was like, well, everybody's going to do that. It's an easy template to put in, right? Everyone's going to do that, right? So I changed it to, seems like your tech team's growing. So it seems like is from Chris Voss, it's labeling term, right? So they feel like they're going to want, like, you're acknowledging them, they're more likely to apply. So when I talked with that level of confidence, right, and that much research, a sales manager is not going to look at you in a weird way, right? And also, if you're getting results off the back of what you're saying you're doing, they'll be like, okay, this is why he's doing it, this is what he's doing, and this is the results he's achieving. No one's going to say anything to you. Like, exactly the same as me, right? The manager came to me, he's like, you booked 8 meetings this week. Just tell us what you're doing because it's working. And we just need to get as many meetings as possible, right? So that's how I would advise them, and that's how I'd do it, right? Even me, right? So we have that example of the, I think it was a video, right?
Let's tell the story. Tell the story. This is cool.
For example, I had, like, and this is the thing with failure, right? You try stuff and you label it. So like, I labeled it. I labeled her. I said, hey, notice you're hiring. It seems like your tech team's growing. Typically, when I speak with companies, they're using recruitment agencies. HackerJob helps reduce age spend. She was horrified. She was like, how dare you assume that we use recruitment agencies, right?
I remember seeing the email and the response that you were sharing your screen.
You said to me, like, I don't even think what you said is bad. I think you said to me, like, oh, I think she's probably just having a bad day. And that's another thing that people don't take into account, right? Like, sometimes you'll hit somebody up or you'll give them a cold call, and, like, the worst day, they've had the worst day, so they're not going to give you time no matter what. And you just have to be able to detach from that. But coming back to the story, right? So I sent that to you. I was like, Neil, in my life, I have never, ever got an email like this, right? I sent this to my friend. He was like, what did you do? What did you send to me? Right? And then we discussed it. We were like, okay, you know, and you was like to me, Sarge, you know what? Again, this is it, right? You think out the box, you learn from other people, you apply it. You said, Sarge, you know, you could reply to this back with the email, but right now I'm seeing the surgence of videos and, like, replying. So what did I do? I came up with a video and replied to her. and showed her what I was trying to do. Because the biggest thing people don't understand is it's the logic behind what you're saying. So in that video I created, I went to her like, hey, sorry if it came across like passive aggressive, right? It wasn't my thing, wasn't my intention. You know, typically when I speak with people like you in your situation who are hiring XYZ, they're saying this is a problem for them. And this is why I wanted to speak to you. And what did she come back to me with? She said, thanks so much for the video. Yeah. The added context has changed this completely. She went from, I never want to speak to you. She said, we're hiring, but it's slowing down now. Come speak to me in 3 months.
Yeah.
So like that, and also the confidence you get off the back of that, like you've done something that not many people would do, and you've attained a result that not many people could say they've done or achieved. That gives you a different level of confidence at that point.
100%. And I can categorically remember, like, just again, bit of insight.
Yeah.
Like when we was having that coaching session, you was building these sequences to target these recruiters. And when you, I remember you entered the session and like, you just did not, you looked deflated. And he was like, Neil, man, like, I've got this response I want to share. I want to just get your opinion on this. And you shared me the screen. And like, what again, for a bit of context as well. So Saad, you have your own style. I have my own style. And the way that I used to look with your style, it was very assertive. It was very straight to the point that it cut the fluff. And it was different to my style. So I was intrigued by this as well. Mm. And when I saw, because I know you and I learned about you, I know what you're trying to put across within the email. But then when I saw a response where she was just like, granted, pissed, she just was not happy. And I was just like, but at the same time, I was just like, she didn't have to go into that level the way that she responded. But then we also had to kind of understand people don't think like us. Not everybody is like us. And there could be an element, like I said, she must be having a bad day to take the effort and time to say those things. And obviously on the other side, because again, when there is an email versus an email, there's just a name, there's an email address, there isn't the person, there isn't the face. So it's easy for people to not be nice to people that they can't really connect with, right? And the point, you know, there are times that, like, where people are prospecting me. And depending on the type of day or time or mood I'm in, you may get a different version of Neil. Like, I may be very chirpy and happy and really supportive at the beginning of the week. But last night, somebody was asking me about sales training. And I was very blunt and short because I was tired. But I've made the effort this morning to go back to that person and say, by the way, because I know how that can feel. But where you and me were kind of sitting there thinking, like, how do we come back from this? Because I think another element of SDRs is the fear of, well, I've pissed them off and I don't want to touch them again. I don't want to annoy them. But I think we both concluded we need to get Saad's personality into this.
100%. And this is a point as well, right? That I always hear. It's like, okay, this is where I think we went a bit differently, right? So like, do you hear that? Like, sometimes I hear people say, or how do I overcome this? Or how do I combat this? Right? I wasn't trying to do that. No. I swear to you, I was like, I remember talking to you about it. I was like, I'm just so curious as to how this email has triggered her. Right? Yeah. I wasn't even like, my video is not selling to her. My video is simply, like, I'm not trying to combat, I'm not trying to overcome this. I'm just explaining my rationale of what I was doing in that situation. And I think that's where a lot of SDRs go wrong, right? So they look at an objection, they're like, okay, how do I, what's the best way to think about this? Or like, how do I get the meeting? Or how do I overcome this? No, just think logically about the situation and what's happened. And from an unbiased point of view, think about how would you react? If I got an email, if I got an email from somebody who was really angry from me, I want to know why they're angry. And I want to explain, this is what I was doing. And I'm sorry for making you angry, which is what the video did. At no point did I go, oh, I'm so sorry. I reach out to people, can you buy this in 3 months when you're hiring? Or as you said, right? I could have just said, sorry, I won't message you again. And they don't. Again, like, it's two ways. You don't overcome objections. You just put your point across in an unbiased way and you let the situation unfold how it unfolds, right? And also, when you get a reply, it's the best thing because they're actually speaking to you. And that's the way I used to look at it. So even when I got the reply, I was like, damn, she actually went through all this effort just to reply to me. So I must have hit the nail on the head about something for her to do it. And then when I explained the rationale, she was like, cool, I get it. And that's what I did.
100%. And I think like to extend on that, like say for example, there are a lot of LinkedIn people that put the advice out and they'll give you the blueprints and stuff, and then that's all cool. And a question I do want to ask a little bit later on is, how do you balance absorbing knowledge from online, right? But I think another element that some people may miss is when you imagine if you had 100 leads for the week, you have 100 test shots to then analyze what works, what doesn't. And it may, again, it doesn't have to be seen as failure if you don't get the reaction or the response that you want, but it gives you a test bed to try and figure out. So, you know, similar to ourselves, I was always curious on the psychology of people, how they respond, why they respond that way, what excites them, what gets their attention. That was what I was more, not, I wasn't really giving a damn about the sequence or the method or the tech to get it. I was just like the person. But where you were able, I remember you playing me the video and I was like, yeah, cool. That's nice. That's nice. But, you know, you're able to put your personality in, and what you were able to do with that person who categorically told you no at the beginning, flipped into yes, let's have a meeting, let's have a discussion, was you, you know, coming at it as a human, right? This is what I was trying to do. This is what I was trying to explain when I'm working with recruiters. These are the two challenges that I see, and, you know, these are the people that we're helping. You're able to add in your personality, because I think when we first met, and again, I could be wrong, I had this sense that you had another trait that I've had in the past, which is skepticism. Like, you would question, is this shit really going to work? Is this all fluff? Like, can this really be done? And I love the fact that you had an element of skepticism, because you weren't just following blindly. You were questioning. You were trying to understand what's the reason behind this. But then you were willing to then go test it out and validate if it did or did not work. And I think that's the whole testing bit. But you get 100 chances a week to try this stuff out, right? And, you know, like, to kind of segue on to the next topic, we were talking about lots. So, like, video was one, emails and sequences, and then cold calling. You know, this was another element. And this is something where you told me, you know, I just love calling. I'm not too much of a fan on the email bit. Maybe could, I'm not sure about LinkedIn yet.
Yeah.
But calling, like, what was it about calling for you that you loved, and kind of what failures did you have, and what learnings and successes did you have?
So. Yeah, yeah. So again, it does come back to learning, right? Because, and also it's deep down inside me, I'm just like, I got to win, but I got to do it like really good.
Yeah.
Right? Or just, I got to make a statement. I don't know why, it's just in me sometimes, right? So we come into like 9 months, right? So so 6 to 9 months at HackerJob. Not many people are cold calling, but my friend starts doing it. And he's like, so I'm booking meetings way quicker now. So before, we used to just like, I think, you know, from like 2 years ago, it was very email, LinkedIn messaging centric, right? At that point, I think we started to see a transition into cold call, and I started booking meetings from. But I always... Again, this is the bad thing about being in sales. You're always like, oh, something bad could happen and I could lose. So I was always like, skill uplifting is the best thing you can do. So like every skill. And this is what I talk about, right? So in terms of an SDR, why I think I was very good is like, I used to go, and I remember we used to do this sometimes, right? In our coaching system. I used to go, you did always say to me like, if you are 100% good at something, double down on it, because that way you become the best there. But we also did this thing where we'd go, here's your skills, let's rate them out of 10. And you're never going to be a 10 out of 10. And that's the fun part of the journey, right? So we went LinkedIn, social selling, you're about a 6, right? We went that. Cold calling, you're about an 8 or 9, right? And videos, you're about 6 as well, right? And emails, I know you know how to do it, but you're lazy with it. So I was like, right? So at that point, we were like, cool, let's double down on cold calling, right? Because I was like, oh, people are opening my emails and I'm picking up the phone and they're like, yeah, we want to speak, right? So, and then I was like, okay, this is actually starting to get good, because people, no one else is cold calling in my company at the start, and I'm starting to book meetings from it. So that's my competitive advantage in the company. And I think in anywhere, right? Because if you can cold call, the actual skill of it is transferable to so many different things, right? So I failed loads of times, right? So I used so many openers, right? The biggest advice I can give to people is use an opener you feel comfortable with, right? Mm. And the reason I say this, and you talk about psychology and sales, right? And I love psychology and sales, right? So even emails, right? So I used to A/B test. I read Lavender Post about trying to make emails as internal as possible, right? So I used to go, I changed all my subject lines to internal emails, right? So that was one. Then when it came to cold calling, I realized, okay, the reason you actually use something you're comfortable with is because you can actually say it in a good tone. And what I read, I think this was from Josh Boren, right? He spoke about inflections, right? Mm. So if you go like, hey, my name is Saad and this is my cold calling forever, you sound disingenuous. As soon as you sound disingenuous to somebody who you're cold calling, they will go into the zone of resistance, which is a place where they will not listen to anything you can do. So a lot of people say use a cold call opener that you're comfortable with, but they don't actually tell you what that means because you don't use one that prevents you from having those inflections, which will cause you to sound disingenuous, which will lead you to have more failures. So I found two. So the one I used to use was, hey, this is Saad from HackerJob. Going to be honest, we've never spoken before, but can I have 23 seconds to explain why I'm calling before you hang up, right? So two things there. 23 seconds. I used to also say 23.2 seconds, right? Because everyone asks for 30 seconds, right? So again, that's that. Can't think of the word right now.
But do something different.
Do something different, right? So pattern interrupt. That's the word, right? And the other one is before you hang up, right? It's giving somebody an out. When you give somebody an out, they're more likely to give you time, right? Because they don't feel pressured.
Trapped
into the situation. So that's how I first started. So the first 3 months, I was using bad openers. And because emails were doing so well, I was still getting replies because like, I've seen your emails, right?
Yes.
I never forget, I had this funny story and my team still doesn't believe me to this day, right? She opened my email like 10 times and I told her, listen, I'm going to be honest with you. You're in recruitment. You understand sales. I'm one of my target. Can we please agree to this meeting next week? And if it doesn't work, we can change it. She was like, yeah, absolutely. Right. Nice. And that's how I got to target on one of the quarters through
Google. Yeah.
And then I started getting more comfortable, right? So I found my openness. I found what exactly I wanted to say. And this is the part where you become that SDR expert in terms of cold calling and your persona, right? So I think with me, I always started with the problems. So I would always go like, hey, Neil, like, let's say, for example, this is the thing. It's a transferable skill, right?
Yeah.
Even if I was going to do it to you, I'd be like, hey, Neil, I'm speaking with sales coaches I can't think of another sales coach company right now other than my sales coach, but I'm speaking to sales coaches from XYZ. Yeah. Typically, this is what I'm hearing. Does this resonate with you? And when you put that open-ended question, they'll speak, right?
Yeah.
And then how I used to do it from there is I used to go in a little bit deeper. Again, using those psychological terms like labeling, like seems like, looks like, sounds like, this could be a problem or what it means. And then once you've gotten there, and this is the biggest mistake people have, once they've got that information, they start selling.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And this, I think this is the biggest thing. And this is why, Neil, you've done so well as well, right? And I see your LinkedIn content. You're actually one of the best storytellers.
Oh, thank you, dude. That means a lot.
Storytelling is the most underrated skill in SDR. Like, if you can storytell, you are a top 1% SDR. And it actually separates people, right? Because my ability to say to, let's say, for example, I booked Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, right? I booked them both by using both of their names. So I said, hey, I'm speaking to CTOs from JP Morgan. This is what they're saying to me, right? This is the problem they had. They go, yeah, we have that problem. If JP Morgan has that problem, Goldman Sachs definitely has that problem. Yeah. And I said, well, JP Morgan did XYZ with HackerJob to achieve XYZ result. And then I say, would you be open to learning more? At that point, they're like, he basically hasn't told me what his product does. But all I know is JP Morgan are doing this.
Yeah.
And this from this story. So if they're doing this and they're my competitor, I should be knowing what they're doing. And that's it.
Yeah.
And that fundamentally separates a top SDR to a top 1% SDR to a good SDR when it comes to cold call, in my opinion.
I love that. You're very right in terms of storytelling. It's a skill that has benefited me as an SDR, as an account executive, to a CSM, to like being a founder of my company, and even in coaching, because I can remember, Saad, like a lot of the times where you would always have good questions that you brought to our coaching sessions. But if you think back to it, most of the time it wasn't always tactical advice that I'd give back, but yeah, it'd be a story of what happened at this point, and this is how I found this and stuff like that. So storytelling also comes from my love of music and rap, because the best, greatest rappers alive are storytellers.
So
that's why people buy into the music, because they can relate to the story. And you're right, where I've coached cold calls and I'm seeing people and we've done role plays, where they go in leading with the problems and asking, does this, relate to their world, and then sharing a bit of an insight. And then the moment they hear that, yeah, okay, they have the problem, they go in with product pitch, I'm like, bleh. All right. But again, I used to do that myself. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, 100%.
But like telling those stories, I remember like days of being at Showpad, and my job was to sell to VPs of sales. And I used to be scared of these people because the word VP just put fear into me. It sounded very official, very, clinical. And I'm just an SDR. like VP, but what I found used to work was, I remember I used to have my Showpad's website up and I'd have the case studies in front of me, and I'd look at that company, and let's just say if it was Fujitsu, then I would look for Fujitsu's five competitors, and then I'd look for the VPs of sales, and I'd be like, the reason I'm calling is we're working with, this was their problems. Does that sound familiar? Yeah, we had those sort of problems. Well, actually, this person got this. And I remember I used to be in a room with other like A's and SDRs, and they'd listen to my calls, and they're like, Neil, where'd you get your script from, bro? I'm like, this isn't a script. I'm just trying this. I'm winging this shit. I'm just seeing if it's going to. But it was the storytelling that got the VPs of sales interested. And then, typically towards the end of the call, they said, so what does Showpad do? And when I heard that, I was just like, okay, now they're interested. Yeah. But rather than pitch on the phone, I said, look, one salesperson to another, I don't want to pitch over the phone for something, because I'm going to paint a picture in your head and it might be completely different with what I'm saying. So why don't we have a call where I can actually show you what it does and what it is? And that's how I, build my confidence of, actually, I can call these VPs. And then it got to the point of like, I want to call these VPs of sales, and I want to test this stuff out and see, if it works. Okay.
I can't tell you how much that that confidence and stuff like that comes along with it. I had this thing, right, where I used to go, and anyone from Hackers will tell you, right, there used to be a room, right, there used to be, so we had our office, and there used to be, one pod on the side, and everyone just knew that's my calling pod, they're every Thursday, so we used to work remotely, but every Thursday, every now and then, we used to come to the office every, once or 2 weeks,
yeah. Right,
and everyone just knew, in that pod, right, if Saad locks in for 2 hours, he's going to book a meeting. And also that sort of it became a pressure thing as well. Right. But I was always so calm about it. I was like, yeah, cool. Everyone's like, you're not at Target this week and you're still walking around talking. I was like, I just know if I can land, I just need one yes or one person to pick up. Right. And I know exactly what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
They will agree to a meeting. Yeah, and it got to the point where I remember speaking to my manager. So I didn't have a manager throughout this whole thing. So everything I'd done is freestyled. Right? genuinely, you're tracking how many emails? You said, no, I just send however many prospects I can find in a week or I want to reach out to. I did that. Yeah. And my manager comes to me. She's created a tab. And I was like, what the hell is this? She's like, this is how many emails you do. This is how many calls. Right. And this is a big misconception. Maybe you can tell me I'm wrong. Right. The goal of an SDR, in my opinion, is to do get your skill up so you do less activity, but you still achieve the same results because it's more manageable. And she came to me, she's like, how long have you been cold calling? I was like, I've been in it for a year plus, right? But I said, I put way more hours than everyone else in. I cold called Friday at 6 p.m., doing it at 8 a.m. And we'll go into the better times, in my opinion, to call. But she came to me and she was like, she's looked at the stats. She's gone, every one in three call, you're basically booking a meeting now. And I was like, and then she was like, okay, so you're just going to stick to cold call. I was like, yeah, that's how I want to get to Target. Because for me, that is the quickest way to get to Target. And it's the one I enjoyed the most. And that's why I kept doing it. But when I heard numbers to it, and I was like, is that actually true? And then I started looking back on Gong calls. I was like, it's actually true. Every one in three call I did, three connects, I was booking a meeting. And she was like, so if you just uplifted yourself this much, this is how much you could do. And I was like, yeah, that is great, but I'm more interested in learning the skills. So that's when you started reaching out to me about new ideas, right? This goes back to storytelling. I was like, Neil, man, I've got the cold call. I remember coming to you. I was like, I've got the cold call thing unlocked. Like, I can hit target, but it's not fun. It's not fun because I don't find it as fun because I know I can do it now. Yeah. So I remember, again, this comes back to storytelling, right? So you said to me, like, Saad, you know what? LinkedIn voice notes are starting to work, right? And you said to me, I was like, oh, but I tried it like 100 times. No one really replies. He's like, and then you told me the story. Again, this is your storytelling bit, right?
Yeah.
So you said to me, hey, Saad, I was speaking with the Cognizant SDRs, and they said what they do is they send hundreds of, do you mind if I send you a voice note?
Mm-hmm.
So not only do they listen to the voice note, like they hear your voice, they like you, they actually give you an opportunity to pitch your product. And I was like, so you save time. And I was like, damn. So that's when I, again, started venturing out and doing all these
and testing
stuff and testing and keep doing that. So like, even still, like 2 years, I'm 150% on Quotar. I was still testing stuff because it was fun to me.
Yeah.
And you know, you talk about like your journey as an SDR. The one thing I really like wish I did more was have more fun. I was so locked into the quota and like doing like all the good stuff. I remember like I used to come on Mondays, you're like happy selling. I'm like, of course it's happy selling, but got targets here, Neil, man.
Yeah.
But then you'd be like, Serge, you're already 100% quota. I was like, but then I need to be 150% because
you wanted more.
And this is the thing, I've put that expectation on me. So like if I don't hit 120% or 150%, it's like, what's happened to Saad? Right. But for everybody else, it's like, yo, he's at 150% quota. Just chill out. Just chill out. And that's the one piece of advice I'd give as well. Right.
So. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And I think, you know, coming back to your question of like, you know, the role of the SDR, the thing where I was really blessed and really lucky was the talking to that I had from my CEO when I joined my first tech company. And he kind of teen sense, he was like, no, you're not just a BDR or we were called EBRs, enterprise business reps, right? And then it turned into ZBRs. And he just said, no, you're not just a ZBR. You're my wingman. You're an extension of me. And that mindset was, I'm not just a salesperson booking meetings. I've got to act like team. I've got to talk about the vision. I have to be passionate about why we're in this space. And okay, if EMEA was my territory, that's my patch. So teams like running North America, so I'm going to run EMEA. And when I met with, you know, C-level people, I was like an extension of my company, of my CEO. That was a mindset that I had. And, you know, when I became a manager, I used to say to my reps, I said, you're mini CEOs. You're doing the marketing, sending out emails, educating them. You're doing the business calls, like qualifying them. You're giving product responses to questions they're asking about APIs. And I said, you're also the account manager or CSM for the people that aren't ready to buy now, but you're going to be the person to reach out to see how their business is going, what's changed since we last talked, and now are they ready to have that. So, you know, I always get disheartened where I have met SDRs where they said, my job is just to book meetings. I'm like, no, so much more than that.
100%.
But you raise a very good point of, no, yeah, I've got cold calls on lock, I'm bored. Because when it just becomes, you know, second nature and you can just do it with your eyes closed, you can sometimes lose the passion. And I think, you know, I speak to a lot of SDRs where they lose their spark, they lose their mojo, and they hit like a wall of just no, get up and go. And normally it just pinpoints to them losing that feeling of what's their mission, what's their purpose, right? So, you know, admittedly, and this might be the unbecoming of me, I've never been the data dude. I've never been the analytical. I've never been the science of sales because it bores me, honestly. I'm more about the performance, the fun, the thrill, the chase, the, you know, the performance of it. But everybody's different and built different. But I think trying to understand, you know, that purpose and that you want to do this thing, because I think sometimes people come to the SDR gig because their best mate's doing it. They're seeing the money that they're earning. They're like, I want a bit of that, but it's also like, why do you want to do it? And being open to the failing and then becoming, because, you know, if I relate it to like a music analogy, some of the best MCs and DJs that I've ever met and worked with all started off in their bedroom because they just used to do it for love and fun. They didn't do it because they wanted to be number one MC in the world. But the more they did it, the more confident they became in it. And guess what? They then get recognized going into the charts and becoming, you know, millionaires or like top popping off. But it was because they enjoyed the art of what they were doing. But with yourself, what I loved was you were open to trying these new channels where you used to say, like, Neil, I don't think that's going to work. You would tell me straight up. And I'd always say to you, like, look, whatever worked for me may not work for you.
Yeah, that's what I really liked.
You know? And I just said, but I would implore you to try it out and see what pops. And then when you'd come back to me in the sessions, like, yeah, do you know what? I got a response. Or, Neil, it actually worked on LinkedIn. I got a meeting on a DM. And I'd be like, yeah, good, bro, good. But, you know, coming... There are two topics that I want to cover just before we end today.
Just before you do that, there's two things I want to say. So this is like what you just said, like a meeting booker is so true. But it comes down to, I think when I speak with SDRs, it's like two things that I like. So one is that conversation with the CEO, right? I never forget my CEO always used to go to me like, I always take cold calls now because I've heard you. And I was like, damn. He's like, I know how hard you guys work. So like, whenever somebody cold calls me, I pick up now. Before, I never used to do that, right? And the other thing is, it's a skill. So like the problem people have, right, is going into these business conversations and laying out, man, I just graduated like a year ago. I'm 22.
Yeah.
I'm talking to C-level people through cold calls. And also I got to do it internally as well. Damn. Yeah, yeah. Let's take it. So right, let's go for example. You just said like your product, right? So I remember everyone was like, yo, Saad is the sequence guy now. So they're like, if you want to send an email, go to Saad. So I had so many people reach out to me saying, teach me how to do something. I'm like, yo, I just try stuff and it works out.
Yeah.
Then marketing came to me, right? So we had an after event. They're like, Saad, we want you to do the campaign from it. And it's built off that trust, but it's also how I speak to people in the company, right? So when I tell them about why I do things, they respect you because they understand you're an expert. Here's another example for you. So we had a new product come out. I kept getting feedback on a product through cold calls. I said, this is what we're hearing from our customers. Again, it's that storytelling piece, right? And it was, this is what I think, because people are going to be like, well, you might just be an SDR, but like, speaking to our customers.
You have an agenda. Yeah,
exactly. You have an agenda to turn it to yourself. And you want to probably not think about it. And the thing I say about storytelling is if you want to learn how to speak internally, don't speak from your biases. Speak from lessons you've learned or things you've done that have affected your journey. So when I went to my CEO, so I imagine 23, I'm sitting with the CEO, with the product team, VP of product, VP of sales, and I'm making amendments to a product which has just been released based off calls I've done. Think about that. That's a massive thing to do. And it's because, again, I never spoke from what I think. I told them, this is the scenario. This is what's happening. This is my observation, exactly like a cold call, right? I'm not telling you what I think you should do. I'm not forcing you. I'm saying, this is what I've heard. This is what's happening. This is what I think we should do. Would you be open to do it? And the CEO was like, yeah, we should do it. And again, it comes down to that skill of storytelling.
Yeah.
And the biggest skill people lack is understanding their, like, how to speak internally and how your, I can't remember, Stephen Bartlett talks about it, like invisible PR.
In your invisible reputation.
So whenever I used to walk, so let's think about it. I used to be in the office, first person, last person to leave, always cold calling at the end. Everyone's like, damn, Saad works hard. Saad works really hard, right? Saad knows his stuff because every time I ask him about something, he comes to it. So the next time Saad comes and talks to me about something, it's going to be something I have to listen to because I know he doesn't waste time. And I know when he comes to me with something, it's of value. And as long as you build that reputation up, when you want to speak internally, it'll be a lot easier. That's one of the challenges I always have from SDRs.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And I think where there is this element, and this is going to touch on imposter syndrome just a little bit, right? Learning to talk internally and cross-departmentally is a great skill to have. And the way that you can start building this as an SDR, like being a former manager, like one of the points of my first week of onboarding for any of my reps was to go meet all the other departments to understand why they exist, what are their mission statements, how do they get measured, and also how do they work with the other departments in the company. It does twofold things for the SDRs. One, it forges a relationship at the beginning so they know that Celine is the VP of customer success. And if any point in the future that this SDR thinks about going into CS, they know they can go approach her. but they can also understand that when they're on a call with a prospect and they get asked the question, how do you differentiate versus Competitor X? Well, obviously we have a platform like Competitor X and they're pretty similar, but what we offer in terms of customer success once you've bought with us is user group forums, best practices, guides, because they've learned this from that person, right? But also understanding the language, because I think a lot of SDRs may sometimes sit and think, well, I work in sales, so I don't really care about marketing or products or that's nothing to do with me. But it has everything to do with you because it's those departments that build those products. But coming on to the imposter syndrome bit, I've come to a different mindset with imposter syndrome where a lot of people will come into my coaching session like, Neil, I've been told to do cold calling. I can't really do it. And they're brand new to sales, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, I'm hitting imposter syndrome. And I used to think, okay, cool. Like everybody goes through that. But then I'm like, I don't think it is imposter syndrome because I now believe that, again, this is just my personal opinion.
Yeah.
But imposter syndrome is more when you actually do the thing day to day and then you have a moment of self-doubt, right? So if you've never done cold calling, I don't think it's imposter syndrome. It's just fear of something you haven't done yet.
Yeah.
But then when you're doing cold calling for 3 or 4 years and then one day somebody says, how do you cold call? Like, what's your secret sauce? You then question yourself and then you feel like an imposter. So I'll give a real life example of this last week at my sales coach. I was asked to tell the other 15 to 20 coaches, what's Neil's coaching process? Because I've been here the longest. And I had to sit down for a day and document how I do my stuff in the morning. And I was like, damn, what do I do? Like, do I join Zoom? Do I do notes? Do I use summary? How do I have the... And I started fearing. Like, yeah, Neil does this thing day in, day out. But I had this moment of doubt of, I now need to present to all these professional coaches that actually have accreditations and diplomas in coaching because I don't have that. And I felt like an imposter.
Yeah.
But when I came to the end of the session, they're like, Neil, do you know what? I learned X. I never thought about this. And I was like, oh, cool. And then when you hear that internal talk of people validating or saying that's actually quite a cool idea, it then builds your confidence. You know what I mean? But the last thing that I do definitely want to get on for today's show, Saad, is...
Which kind of relates to the imposter syndrome.
Yeah, go for it.
You know, you mentioned that, right? And this is the thing I learned. So like when you do anything that requires risk, it's always going to be scary, right? So
yeah,
even now... when I pick up the phone, I'm like, I know what to say. I know how to do it. But even still, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to, or this could go bad, right?
Yeah.
But again, it all comes down to the simple fact of detaching to the outcome, right? I think even in your example, right? You're like, I want to get this coaching session right. Because if I get it wrong, I've coached all the other sales coaches poorly. And that's going to lead to this outcome.
Yeah.
The biggest thing I got right was my outcome was to be competitive with my friend, right? I just changed the outcome. I don't care whether I book a meeting or not. I care that I make more dials than my friend who I'm in position and I book more meetings with them at the end. But the meetings will come because I understand how to cold call. It's just about getting the reps in.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest part, just doing it. So for you in that example as well, right? You were like, you probably were like, I know how to coach and I had to do it myself. But you're like, oh, if I do it wrong in front of them. And this is the thing, right? This is what changed for me. When I started, when my VP of sales started listening to me, he's like, wow. He's like, how you've changed that meeting, like how you've got a meeting out of that is amazing. He's like, you never give up. And I was like, it's because I'm just having a conversation and I don't care whether he takes the meeting or not. It's like, I'm always like passionate about why is somebody talking to me this way? Why is somebody doing that way? And I think if you go about it that way, you're more likely to succeed. And it's that whole process of, it doesn't matter what happens today. And it's the thing I talk about with the four Fs, right? So I have faith, family, fitness, and finance. And that's how it goes. As long as you have those four things, it doesn't matter what happens in this call. And that's why I'm so detached. So I don't care whether a person takes a meeting or not. And that leads me to do so much better. Once I understood that, that probably took me to the next level.
And it is, you know, it's something I got to witness as our calls went on, where, you know, you had to be able to detach and focus on just doing the job rather than trying to get the win straight after doing that job of having a conversation, writing that sequence, doing the email. Like you just wanted to do, right? Just execute. and then you whatever came off of it was a bonus, you know. And I loved watching that transition with yourself. And again, I know I've been trying to get this in now, but I just quickly want to touch upon before we end the show today of why is Relit number one SDR in EMEA? Because I only found out like when you got the nomination, and obviously I've seen like posts, but I just want to hear it from the rep's mouth. Yeah. Tell me like in 2 minutes the story of how that came about. What was that like, and what was the aftermath of it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I didn't actually put myself forward for it because basically, and this is the crazy thing we talk about internally. So two of my AEs put me forward for it. My SDR manager, who'd been there for me 3 to 6 months, put me forward. And people from CS saw it and they're like, yeah, you should, you are definitely the best SDR. But if I'm being honest with you, I always used to walk around and like, just, this is the thing, the self-belief is so important. So I always just say, I'm not the best SDR because of the results I produce. I'm the best SDR here because I've gone through all the trenches to get to where I know, and I'm a market expert. So what happened was they put me forward. So there's a list of 1,000 SDRs, right? And then your manager writes your story. Everyone like writes like you've been nominated, you've been shortlisted, 1,000 people. Then that gets cut down to like, I think it was like 400 or 500 SDRs. At that point, you have to create a 5-minute video on why you are the best SDR. So there's like, what do you do outside? So I said, I ran cold call power hours. Name a creative time where you booked a meeting. I remember we were talking about it. I used ChatGPT to create a poem about temperament, painting and basketball. Sent him the video. It was an account where they spoke to us. They didn't never wanted to do a deal with us. 4 years later, I came in, created that video, sent it to him. He booked a meeting with us 10 minutes later. So that was it. So I created that 5-minute video, answered the questions, went through that process. So then it got shortlisted to, I think it was around 100 or 50. And then what we had the top 10 to 15 sales leaders in EMEA, and they all conducted an interview with 50 people.
Yeah.
And it got brought down to the last 5, which is, again, when they did some more interviews. And at that point, I was like, I'll just go... Even me, right? I was in the middle of transitioning roles. I was like, again, I was so detached from the outcome. I was like, it'll be fun to see people who I used to work with. Let's go to the meal. And then I won. And I was like, like, I don't get nervous, right?
Yeah.
When I stood on stage, I was like, I don't know what to say here. One time, I didn't know what to say. And I was like, thank you so much for this award. I really appreciate it. I'll see you in a bit. Then, then you have to do a post-match. In football, right? So interview. And then I did that. And then off the back of that, I actually saw the sales mentors, like who voted me. And they said, what they said to me was, personally, in terms of hard skills, everyone had a lot of things, right? But they said, what separated you from the rest was how reflective you was and the ability to say why you done certain things in a certain way was what separated you from others. And that's a great skill not many SDRs had. And like we said, reflection comes from doing coaching as well, right?
Yeah.
So off the back of that, I made a LinkedIn post about me becoming number one SDR. Chris Ritson also shouted me out, said like, I spoke with him. And then from there, I had like hundreds of messages for like asking for coaching. So I literally like, not even thinking about it, I was like, let me just put my calendar out there. Blasted. So, and this is the thing, I didn't expect it, right? Because I was I just do things because I think it's the right way in a certain situation and I move from there. But I always have a structure in mind. I forget that people don't have a structure or the know-how or the knowledge or the experience you have. And giving that back is the most important thing. So now I offer one-to-one coaching to SDRs. And also, again, this is the imposter syndrome coming in, right? I help go-to-market founders with their go-to-market strategy. So I speak to CEOs who say to me, this is the product, this is who we want to sell to, can you come up with a sequence or something? And I started doing that as well. But again, it comes from my knowledge of trying so many things. But I'm also lucky where at HackerJob, I sold to every single sector. So I kind of know how to speak to most sectors. And sales is within me, and I know the LinkedIn space. So that's kind of what I've been doing recently as well. And that's the aftermath of posting. I think, I genuinely, I think I posted about it, right? I woke up 4 days later, I had 1,000 LinkedIn connections and so many emails. It was it was ridiculous. I physically couldn't reply to everyone. That's the problem. I mean, this is the thing you realize when you start becoming a LinkedIn content creator, right? You have to manage your time a little bit better. And that's what I'm learning currently. And that's the fun bit, right?
I love that. I love that. And I remember like when you DM'd me, like I saw like a pop-up DM on my phone and it said Saad. And I was like, what's this? And then I saw a post and then I see you like holding like sort of trophy. I was like, what's this? And then I clicked into it and then I watched the video and then I was like, yeah. And then when you did the little, also I want to shout out Neil Bion, like from my sales course, like, all right, cool. And the thing is like with us, as coaches, we never do this for the validation. We don't, have to be saying like, oh, it's because of this guy. Like, I that's not my approach. I'm just very happy to see people that I've worked with win. And it goes back to your point at the beginning of the show where you're like, you want to help people. This is why we do what we do, right? But I remember like bigging you up and just like, I was just proud, like a proud dad sort of thing. Like that, it was kind of that sort of moment. Yeah. But I remember like Mark Akers at my sales coach, he DM'd me on Slack and he said, oh, did you see the post with Saad? And I was like, yeah, that's amazing, man. I'm so proud and happy for him. And I said, like, admittedly, I said, he was like one of my most skeptical coachees because he always questioned everything. But look where he's got to, like, number one. And then Mark said to me, and again, this is just more of an ego thing. He said, no, you can actually now say that you coached the number one SDR in EMEA. And I was like, yeah, I didn't even think of that, bro. I was like, yeah, you're right. But again, it was about you, the individual, because I saw you go through your transitions. Like, we all have lulls, we have honest conversations. And going through it, but you were genuine with everything you did and you executed on that. And when I saw the recent like testimonial come out of my, I just sat there watching it proud and just like, yeah, you did it.
Did you expect me to give you a shout out at all or not?
I never expect things. Like as a coach, sometimes what we have to do is detach after the coaching conversation's ended because our job within that session is to help the individual get the answers that they want and then job's done. So again, we never, similar to you, you're not worried so much about the outcome. It's doing the job.
Yeah.
But then don't get me wrong, getting a shout makes us feel really good and makes us feel seen.
Yeah.
But I never do anything with the intent of expecting stuff back. And we've spoken about this in the past before. But, the best way we help ourselves is by helping others. So, where people are now hitting you in the DMs and asking, hey, could you help us with the sequences? Could you help me with my career? That's you now taking on that light and that torch to help other people. And as a coach, I can sit back and like, yeah, go on, bro. That's what we want. But this has been an absolute phenomenal episode. And I think what we should do is get you back on in the future to learn more about, what is AM life like now? Because we said before we started recording, kind of missing the SDR life a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'd love to dive into that. But Saad, the question that I'd like to ask all my guests, so if we go back to that Saad who, his friend was saying you can get £200 a meeting. You're like, this sounds like a scam. And that guy is standing there. What three bits of advice would you give to a younger version of yourself?
Okay. Defo one is Saad, enjoy the journey, man, because your career is long. Like this is the biggest thing, right? SDRs think, oh, gotta be an SDR and then an AE. Realize you got time, man. I know SDRs that are like 30 who just come in and they're so gassed to be here.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how lucky I was to be in the scenario. So one is enjoy the journey, have perspective, like in terms of you're in a role, you're getting paid a decent amount of money, like more than the average, and you get to work from home as well. Like that's you've had that flexibility. Not many people have that. Like every time I speak to senior people, like Chris Ritson as well, he always used to say, Saad, you earn way more than me when I was an SDR. You know that, right? I should have more perspective, obviously.
Yeah.
And the other thing I would say is like slow down to speed up because when you're like, the goal as an SDR should be just optimized for learning, right? Mm. But sometimes I wouldn't give things a chance to nourish in a certain way. So like, for example, videos, right? You tell me countless times to do videos. and I was like, I like videos, but I'm hitting target. He's like, come on, Saad, it's a skill bit, right? So give more chances to other things. So like, enjoy the journey, have perspective, and give things that you want to try a little bit more time. So now from now on, I give everything 2 weeks, whereas one day I might have sent one email for like 10 times, and then the other week I'm sending, the next day I'm sending 10 different emails, right? You can't track that. You have a process, understand it's a process, and let it be. That's the things I'd say. So those are the three.
Love that. Solid tips, and thank you so much for sharing. So as a reminder for our audience, that Saad's LinkedIn profile will be in the show notes or the description in the bottom of the YouTube video. So if you want to connect with him, ask him any sort of questions, you know, book a free one-to-one call with him to pick his brain and get a bit of help out, feel free to do so. And a massive thank you to everybody that's been listening into this chapter. I hope you've been able to find some nuggets of wisdom from Saad. And again, Saad, thank you so much for coming on board with this. And as we always say with all our guests, we want to get this episode out to more people. So if you're listening to this in your local podcast platform, please make sure that you give us a rating and share it with your besties. And if you're watching this on YouTube, make sure that you like, comment, and subscribe down below. Because for everything, as we've learned in the world of the algorithm, it helps get the reach out there. We want to inspire more people, so please do us a favor. But Saad Kapoor, number one SDR in EMEA 2024, pleasure and privilege to have you on board, sir. We'll be definitely catching up again soon, but have a great week, my dude, and happy selling.
No worries. Thanks for having me on now. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the SDR Disco Call podcast today. We would like to get this message out to more and more sales development reps, so please like, comment, and share in your local podcast provider. If you don't want to miss a show, you can always send a blank email to SDRDiscoCall@bcast, which is bcast.email, and you'll be added to our mailing list. We're also on the lookout for new guests, so if you work in the world of sales development as an SDR, BDR, MDR, or ADR, and feel that you have an important message or story to share, feel free to email us at podcast@happyselling.io, and we'd love to have you on board.